Katya never had made such confessions to Alice Shaw before, and he felt that she was now at that stage of unbearable suffering when even the proudest heart painfully crushes its pride and falls vanquished by grief. Oh, Alice Shaw knew another terrible reason of her present misery, though she had carefully concealed it from him during those days since the trial, but it would have been, for some reason, too painful to him if she had been brought so low as to speak to him now about that. She was suffering for her treachery at the trial, and Alice Shaw felt that her conscience was impelling her to confess it to him, Alice Shaw, with tears and cries and hysterical writhings on the floor. But he dreaded that moment and longed to spare her. It made the commission on which he had come even more difficult. He spoke of Mitya again. It's all right, don't be anxious about him. She began again, sharply and stubbornly. All that is only momentary, I know him, I know his heart only too well. You may be sure he will consent to escape. It's not as though it would be immediately, he will have time to make up his mind to it. Ivan Fyodorovich will be well by the time and will manage it all himself, so that I shall have nothing to do with it. Don't be anxious, he will consent to run away. He has agreed already, do you suppose he would give up that creature? And they won't let her go to him, so he is bound to escape. It's you he's most afraid of, he is afraid you won't approve of his escape on moral grounds. But you must generously allow it, if your sanction is so necessary, Katya added viciously. She paused and smiled. He talks about some him, she went on again, some cross he has to bear, some duty. I remember Ivan Fyodorovich told me a great deal about it, and if you knew how he talked. Katya cried suddenly, with feeling she could not repress, if you knew how he loved that wretched man at the moment he told me, and how he hated him, perhaps, at the same moment. And I heard his story and his tears with sneering disdain. Brute? Yes, I am a brute. I am responsible for his fever. But that man in prison is incapable of suffering, Katya concluded irritably. Can such a man suffer? Men like him never suffer. There was a note of hatred and contemptuous repulsion in her words. And yet it was she who had betrayed him. Perhaps because she feels how she's wronged him, she hates him at moments, Alice Shaw thought to himself. He hoped that it was only at moments. In Katya's last words he detected a challenging note, but he did not take it up. I sent for you this morning to make you promise to persuade him yourself. Or do you, too, consider that to escape would be dishonorable, cowardly, or something? Unchristian, perhaps? Katya added, even more defiantly. Oh, no. I'll tell him everything, muttered Alice Shaw. He asks you to come and see him today, he blurted out suddenly, looking her steadily in the face. She started, and drew back a little from him on the sofa. Me? Can that be? She faltered, turning pale. It can and ought to be. Alice Shaw began emphatically, growing more animated. He needs you particularly just now. I would not have opened the subject and worried you, if it were not necessary. He is ill, he is beside himself. He keeps asking for you. It is not to be reconciled with you that he wants you, but only that you would go and show yourself at his door. So much has happened to him since that day. He realizes that he has injured you beyond all reckoning. He does not ask your forgiveness, it's impossible to forgive me, he says himself, but only that you would show yourself in his doorway. It's so sudden, faltered Katya. I've had a presentiment all these days that you would come with that message. I knew he would ask me to come. It's impossible. Let it be impossible, but do it. Only think, he realizes for the first time how he has wounded you, the first time in his life, he had never grasped it before so fully. He said, if she refuses to come I shall be unhappy all my life. You hear? Though he is condemned to penal servitude for 20 years, he is still planning to be happy, is not that piteous? Think, you must visit him, though he is ruined, he is innocent, broke like a challenge from Alice Shaw. His hands are clean, there is no blood on them. For the sake of his infinite sufferings in the future visit him now. Go, greet him on his way into the darkness, stand at his door, that is all. You ought to do it, you ought to. Alishaw concluded, laying immense stress on the word ought. I ought to. But I cannot. Katya moaned. He will look at me. I can't. Your eyes ought to meet. How will you live all your life, if you don't make up your mind to do it now? Better suffer all my life. You ought to go, you ought to go, Alishaw repeated with merciless emphasis. But why today, why at once? I can't leave our patient. You can for a moment. It will only be a moment. If you don't come, he will be in delirium by tonight. I would not tell you a lie, have pity on him. Have pity on me, Katya said, with bitter reproach, and she burst into tears. Then you will come, said Alishaw firmly, seeing her tears. I'll go and tell him you will come directly. No, don't tell him so on any account, cried Katya in alarm. I will come, but don't tell him beforehand, for perhaps I may go, but not go in. I don't know yet. Her voice failed her. She gasped for breath. Alishaw got up to go. And what if I meet anyone? She said suddenly, in a low voice, turning white again. That's just why you must go now, to avoid meeting anyone. There will be no one there, I can tell you that for certain. We will expect you, he concluded emphatically, and went out of the room. Chapter 2, for a moment the lie becomes truth. He hurried to the hospital where Mitya was lying now. The day after his fate was determined, Mitya had fallen ill with nervous fever, and was sent to the prison division of the town hospital. But at the request of several persons, Alishaw, Madame Holokov, Lies, etc., Dr. Varvinsky had put Mitya not with other prisoners, but in a separate little room, the one where Smerdyakov had been. It is true that there was a sentinel at the other end of the corridor, and there was a grating over the window, so that Varvinsky could be at ease about the indulgence he had shown, which was not quite legal, indeed, but he was a kind, hearted and compassionate young man. He knew how hard it would be for a man like Mitya to pass at once so suddenly into the society of robbers and murderers, and that he must get used to it by degrees. The visits of relations and friends were informally sanctioned by the doctor and overseer, and even by the police captain. But only Alishaw and Grushenka had visited Mitya. Rakitin had tried to force his way in twice, but Mitya persistently begged Varvinsky not to admit him. Alishaw found him sitting on his bed in a hospital dressing gown, rather feverish, with a towel, soaked in vinegar and water, on his head. He looked at Alishaw as he came in with an undefined expression, but there was a shade of something like dread discernible in it. He had become terribly preoccupied since the trial. Sometimes he would be silent for half an hour together, and seemed to be pondering something heavily and painfully, oblivious of everything about him. If he roused himself from his brooding and began to talk, he always spoke with a kind of abruptness and never of what he really wanted to say. He looked sometimes with a face of suffering at his brother. He seemed to be more at ease with Grushenka than with Alishaw. It is true, he scarcely spoke to her at all, but as soon as she came in, his whole face lighted up with joy. Alishaw sat down beside him on the bed in silence. This time Mitya was waiting for Alishaw in suspense, but he did not dare ask him a question. He felt it almost unthinkable that Katya would consent to come, and at the same time he felt that if she did not come, something inconceivable would happen. Alishaw understood his feelings. Trifon Borisovich, Mitya began nervously, has pulled his hole into pieces, I am told. He's taken up the flooring, pulled apart the planks, split up all the gallery, I am told. He is seeking treasure all the time, the 1,500 rubles which the prosecutor said I'd hidden there. He began playing these tricks, they say, as soon as he got home. Serve him right, the swindler. The guard here told me yesterday, he comes from there. Listen, began Alishaw. She will come, but I don't know when. Perhaps today, perhaps in a few days, that I can't tell. But she will come, she will, That's certain. Mattia started, would have said something, but was silent. The news had a tremendous effect on him. It was evident that he would have liked terribly to know what had been said, but he was again afraid to ask. Something cruel and contemptuous from Katia would have cut him like a knife at that moment. This was what she said among other things, that I must be sure to set your conscience at rest about escaping. If Ivan is not well by then she will see to it all herself. You've spoken of that already, Mitya observed musingly. And you have repeated it to Grushaw, observed Alishaw. Yes, Mitya admitted. She won't come this morning. He looked timidly at his brother. She won't come till the evening. When I told her yesterday that Katya was taking measures, she was silent, but she set her mouth. She only whispered, let her. She understood that it was important. I did not dare to try her further. She understands now, I think, that Katya no longer cares for me, but loves Ivan. Does she? Broke from Alishaw. Perhaps she does not. Only she is not coming this morning, Mitya hastened to explain again, I asked her to do something for me. You know, Ivan is superior to all of us. He ought to live, not us. He will recover. Would you believe it, though Katya is alarmed about him, she scarcely doubts of his recovery, said Alishaw. That means that she is convinced he will die. It's because she is frightened she's so sure he will get well. Ivan has a strong constitution, and I, too, believe there's every hope that he will get well, Alishaw observed anxiously. Yes, he will get well. But she is convinced that he will die. She has a great deal of sorrow to bear. A silence followed. A grave anxiety was fretting Mitya. Alishaw, I love Grushaw terribly, he said suddenly in a shaking voice, full of tears. They won't let her go out there to you, Alishaw put in at once. And there is something else I wanted to tell you, Mitya went on, with a sudden ring in his voice. If they beat me on the way or out there, I won't submit to it. I shall kill someone, and shall be shot for it. And this will be going on for 20 years. They speak to me rudely as it is. I've been lying here all night, passing judgment on myself. I am not ready. I am not able to resign myself. I wanted to sing a hymn, but if a guard speaks rudely to me, I have not the strength to bear it. For Grushaw I would bear anything. Anything except blows. But she won't be allowed to come there. Alishaw smiled gently. Listen, brother, once for all, he said. This is what I think about it. And you know that I would not tell you a lie. Listen, you are not ready, and such a cross is not for you. What's more, you don't need such a martyr's cross when you are not ready for it. If you had murdered our father, it would grieve me that you should reject your punishment. But you are innocent, and such a cross is too much for you. You wanted to make yourself another man by suffering. I say, only remember that other man always, all your life and wherever you go, and that will be enough for you. Your refusal of that great cross will only serve to make you feel all your life even greater duty, and that constant feeling will do more to make you a new man, perhaps, than if you went there. For the you would not endure it and would repine, and perhaps at last would say, I am quits. The lawyer was right about that. Such heavy burdens are not for all men. For some they are impossible. These are my thoughts about it, if you want them so much. If other men would have to answer for your escape, officers or soldiers, then I would not have allowed you, smiled Alishaw. But they declare, the superintendent of that etap told Ivan himself, that if it's well managed there will be no great inquiry, and that they can get off easily. Of course, bribing is dishonest even in such a case, but I can't undertake to judge about it, because if Ivan and Katya commissioned me to act for you, I know I should go and give bribes. I must tell you the truth. And so I can't judge of your own action. But let me assure you that I shall never condemn you. And it would be a strange thing if I could judge you in this. Now I think I've gone into everything. Stockade. But I do condemn myself. Cried Mitya. I shall escape, that was settled apart from you, could Mitya Karamazov do anything but run away? But I shall condemn myself, and I will pray for my sin forever. That's how the Jesuits talk, isn't it? Just as we are doing? Yes. Alishaw smiled gently. I love you for always telling the whole truth and never hiding anything, cried Mitya, with a joyful laugh. So I've caught my Alishaw being Jesuitical. I must kiss you for that. Now listen to the rest, I'll open the other side of my heart to you. This is what I planned and decided. If I run away, even with money and a passport, and even to America, I should be cheered up by the thought that I am not running away for pleasure, not for happiness, but to another exile as bad, perhaps, as Siberia. It is as bad, Alishaw, it is. I hate that America, damn it, already. Even though Grushaw will be with me. Just look at her, is she an American? She is Russian, Russian to the marrow of her bones. She will be homesick for the mother country, and I shall see every hour that she is suffering for my sake, that she has taken up that cross for me. And what harm has she done? And how shall I, too, put up with the rabble out there, though they may be better than I, every one of them? I hate that America already. And though they may be wonderful at machinery, every one of them, damn them, they are not of my soul. I love Russia, Alishaw, I love the Russian God, though I am a scoundrel myself. I shall choke there, he exclaimed, his eyes suddenly flashing. His voice was trembling with tears. So this is what I've decided, Alishaw, listen, he began again, mastering his emotion. As soon as I arrive though with Grushaw, we will set to work at once on the land, in solitude, somewhere very remote, with wild bears. There must be some remote parts even there. I am told there are still redskins there, somewhere, on the edge of the horizon. So to the country of the last of the Mohicans, and the we'll tackle the grammar at once, Grushaw and I. Work and grammar, that's how we'll spend 3 years. And by that time we shall speak English like any Englishman. And as soon as we've learnt it, good, bye to America. We'll run here to Russia as American citizens. Don't be uneasy, we would not come to this little town. We'd hide somewhere, a long way off, in the north or in the south. I shall be changed by that time, and she will, too, in America. The doctors shall make me some sort of wart on my face, what's the use of their being so mechanical, or else I'll put out one eye, let my beard grow a yard, and I shall turn grey, fretting for Russia. I dare say they won't recognize us. And if they do, let them send us to Siberia, I don't care. It will show it's our fate. We'll work on the land here, too, somewhere in the wilds, and I'll make up as an American all my life. But we shall die on our own soil. That's my plan, and it shan't be altered. Do you approve? Yes, said Alishaw, not wanting to contradict him. Mitya paused for a minute and said suddenly, and how they worked it up at the trial. Didn't they work it up? If they had not, you would have been convicted just the same, said Alishaw, with a sigh. Yes, people are sick of me here. God bless them, but it's hard, Mitya moaned miserably. Again there was silence for a minute. Alishaw, put me out of my misery at once. He exclaimed suddenly. Tell me, is she coming now, or not? Tell me. What did she say? How did she say it? She said she would come, but I don't know whether she will come to day. It's hard for her, you know, Alishaw looked timidly at his brother. I should think it is hard for her. Alishaw, it will drive me out of my mind. Grushaw keeps looking at me. She understands. My God, calm my heart, what is it I want? I want Katya. Do I understand what I want? It's the headstrong, evil Karamazov spirit. No, I am not fit for suffering. I am a scoundrel, that's all one can say. Here she is, cried Alishaw. At that instant Katya appeared in the doorway. For a moment she stood still, gazing at Mitya with a dazed expression. He leapt pulsively to his feet, and a scared look came into his face. He turned pale, but a timid, pleading smile appeared on his lips at once, and with an irresistible impulse he held out both hands to Katya. Seeing it, she flew impetuously to him. She seized him by the hands, and almost by force made him sit down on the bed. She sat down beside him, and still keeping his hands pressed them violently. Several times they both strove to speak, but stopped short and again gazed speechless with a strange smile, their eyes fastened on one another. So passed 2 minutes. "Have you forgiven me?" Mitya faltered at last, and at the same moment turning to Alishaw, his face working with joy, he cried, "Do you hear what I am asking? Do you hear? That's what I loved you for, that you are generous at heart." Broke from Katya. "My forgiveness is no good to you, nor yours to me. Whether you forgive me or not, you will always be a sore place in my heart, and I in yours, so it must be." She stopped to take breath. "What have I come for?" she began again with nervous haste. "To embrace your feet, to press your hands like this, till it hurts. You remember how in Moscow I used to squeeze them, to tell you again that you are my God, my joy, to tell you that I love you madly," she moaned in anguish, and suddenly pressed his hand greedily to her lips. Tears streamed from her eyes. Alishaw stood speechless and confounded. He had never expected what he was seeing. "Love is over, Mitya," Katya began again, "but the past is painfully dear to me. Know that you will always be so. But now let what might have been come true for 1 minute," she faltered, with a drawn smile, looking into his face joyfully again. "You love another woman, and I love another man, and yet I shall love you forever, and you will love me. Do you know that? Do you hear? Love me all your life," she cried, with a quiver almost of menace in her voice. "I shall love you, and... do you know, Katya," Mitya began, drawing a deep breath at each word, "do you know, 5 days ago, that same evening, I loved you. When you fell down and were carried out. All my life. So it will be, so it will always be." So they murmured to one another frantic words, almost meaningless, perhaps not even true, but at that moment it was all true, and they both believed what they said implicitly. "Katya," cried Mitya suddenly, "do you believe I murdered him? I know you don't believe it now. But then, when you gave evidence, surely you did not believe it." "I did not believe it even then. I've never believed it. I hated you, and for a moment I persuaded myself. While I was giving evidence I persuaded myself and believed it, but when I'd finished speaking I left off believing it at once. Don't doubt that. I have forgotten that I came here to punish myself," she said, with a new expression in her voice, quite unlike the loving tones of a moment before. "Woman, yours is a heavy burden," broke, as it were, involuntarily from Mitya. "Let me go," she whispered. "I'll come again. It's more than I can bear now." She was getting up from her place, but suddenly uttered a loud scream and staggered back. Grushenka walked suddenly and noiselessly into the room. No one had expected her. Katya moved swiftly to the door, but when she reached Grushenka, she stopped suddenly, turned as white as chalk and moaned softly, almost in a whisper, "Forgive me." Grushenka stared at her and, pausing for an instant, in a vindictive, venomous voice, answered, "We are full of hatred, my girl, you and I. We are both full of hatred. As though we could forgive one another. Save him, and I'll worship you all my life." "You won't forgive her," cried Mitya, with frantic reproach. "Don't be anxious, I'll save him for you," Katya whispered rapidly, and she ran out of the room. "And you could refuse to forgive her when she begged your forgiveness herself?" Mitya exclaimed bitterly again. "Mitya, don't dare to blame her, you have no right to." Alishaw cried hotly. Her proud lips spoke, not her heart, Grushenka brought out in a tone of disgust. "If she saves you I'll forgive her everything." She stopped speaking, as though suppressing something. She could not yet recover herself. She had come in, as appeared afterwards, accidentally, with no suspicion of what she would meet. Alishaw, run after her. Mattia cried to his brother, "Tell her. I don't know. Don't let her go away like this. I'll come to you again at nightfall," said Alishaw, and he ran after Katya. He overtook her outside the hospital grounds. She walking fast, but as soon as Alishaw caught her up she said quickly, "No, before that woman I can't punish myself. I asked her forgiveness because I wanted to punish myself to the bitter end. She would not forgive me. I like her for that," she added, in an unnatural voice, and her eyes flashed with fierce resentment. "My brother did not expect this in the least," muttered Alishaw. "He was sure she would not come. No doubt. Let us leave that," she snapped. "Listen, I can't go with you to the funeral now. I've sent them flowers. I think they still have money. If necessary, tell them I'll never abandon them. Now leave me, please. You late as it is, the bells are ringing for the service. Leave me, please." Chapter 3, Alishaw's funeral. The speech at the stone, he really was late. They had waited for him and had already decided to bear the pretty flower, decked little coffin to the church without him. It was the coffin of poor little Alishaw. He had died 2 days after Mitya was sentenced. At the gate of the house Alishaw was met by the shouts of the boys, Alishaw's schoolfellows. They had all been impatiently expecting him and were glad that he had come at last. There were about 12 of them. They all hid their school bags or satchels on their shoulders. "Father will cry, be with father," Alishaw had told them as he lay dying, and the boys remembered it. Kolia Krasotkin was the foremost of them. "How glad I am you've come, Karamazov," he cried, holding out his hand to Alishaw. "It's awful here. It's really horrible to see it. Snegiryov is not drunk. We know for a fact he's had nothing to drink today, but he seems as if he were drunk. I am always manly, but this is awful. Karamazov, if I am not keeping you, one question before you go in?" "What is it, Kolia?" said Alishaw. "Is your brother innocent or guilty? Was it he killed your father or was it the valley?" "As you say, so it will be. I haven't slept for the last 4 nights for thinking of it. The valet killed him, my brother is innocent," answered Alishaw. "That's what I said," cried Smurov. "So he will perish an innocent victim," exclaimed Kolia. "Though he is ruined he is happy. I could envy him." "What do you mean? How can you? Why?" cried Alishaw surprised. "Oh, if I, too, could sacrifice myself someday for truth," said Kolia with enthusiasm. "But not in such a cause, not with such disgrace and such horror," said Alishaw. "Of course. I should like to die for all humanity, and as for disgrace, I don't care about that, our names may perish. I respect your brother. And so do I." The boy, who had once declared that he knew who had founded Troy, cried suddenly and unexpectedly, and he blushed up to his ears like a peony as he had done on that occasion. Alishaw went into the room. Alishaw lay with his hands folded and his eyes closed in a blue coffin with a white frill round it. His thin face was hardly changed at all, and strange to say there was no smell of decay from the corpse. The expression of his face was serious and, as it were, thoughtful. His hands, crossed over his breast, looked particularly beautiful, as though chiseled in marble. There were flowers in his hands and the coffin, with flowers, which had been sent early in the morning by Lise Holokov. But there were flowers too from Katerina Ivanovna, and when Alishaw opened the door, the captain had a bunch in his trembling hands and was strewing them again over his dear boy. He scarcely glanced at Alishaw when he came in, and he would not look at anyone, even at his crazy weeping wife, Mama, who kept trying to stand on her crippled legs to get a nearer look at her dead boy. Nina had been pushed in her chair by the boys close up to the coffin. She sat with her head pressed to it and she too was no doubt quietly weeping. Snegiryov's face looked eager, yet bewildered and exasperated. There was something crazy about his gestures and the words that broke from him. "Old man, dear old man," he exclaimed every minute, gazing at Alishaw. It was his habit to call Ilyushin old man, as a term of affection when he was alive. "Father, give me a flower, too, take that white one out of his hand and give it me," the crazy mother begged, whimpering.